Sorry I missed out on dropping a podcast last weekend, but you will understand because it was Historic Garden Week and I was standing in the most beautiful garden for 10 hours on Sunday, and I sort of had to work to get ready for that with some lovely ladies helping me as head hostess. There were three of us as head hostess, my goodness, and then we were organizing another 50 ladies to cover this beautiful property called Water Perry Farm. It went smashingly, and guess what? Water Perry Farm in Free Union, Virginia is not something that you missed if you weren't there on Sunday, because you can go anytime. You can go to the website and sign up for a tour the next time you're in Charlottesville, and I intend to take advantage of that a lot in the future. So you just go to waterperryfarm.com. It's named after the fabulous Water Perry in England, which I think I'm going to see when I go on this trip at the end of May with Marianne. Not sure. I got to look at that itinerary. Anyway, you just use the menu bar on waterperryfarm.com and go to Find Gardens and Visits. You can wander through the whole place on your own for $15. So worth it. It's huge, too. Or you could get a tour guided by Catherine Kane, who's the gardener. She designed all of this herself, and she does an awful lot herself, although, my goodness, she does have staff. I don't think she would sleep if she didn't have staff. It's huge. Anyway, so you could get a group of people and do it for $25 and be guided. I got to tell you, it's a wondrous garden. One of the guests on Sunday visiting for Historic Garden Week described it, and I will butcher this pronunciation. They compared it to Frank Cabot's garden up in Quebec called Quatre Vents, you know, Four Winds. Sorry, hablo español. Mon français est déplorable. Anyway, so Historic Garden Week, along with my 45th reunion from high school, holy cow, sort of distracted me. And you might hear the remnants of a cold in my voice because my grandchildren, who I saw last weekend, you know, I have six of them. Nobody's older than six. That is just so surprising to me still. We only ever had two children. Anyway, a lot of you know the story. It's an amazing little tribe of people. And here's what they're really, really good at. And that is giving Lulu, and not Coach, not Jeff, just giving Lulu a cold whenever I go to visit them. So those are my excuses to say that I should have gotten the podcast out this past weekend, but I didn't. So here's one for you, and it's really fun. It's just a conversation from April 5th that Marianne Wilburn and I had about the spring garden, what's going on, what to do. We actually end up going down a bit of a rabbit hole into the world of magnolias. In a world in which neither person knows much about magnolias, that's where we went. Sorry, so put on your patient hat. But there is some great information, mostly supplied by her. Also, a note for sound on the interview. Marianne has invested in a really good headset and microphone. Clearly, I have not. So clearly is the way you'll be listening to her voice. And from the bottom of some garden trug is where mine is coming from. I'll have to work on that. But without further ado, here we are chatting away like we do.
Hello. I am with my friend Marianne Wilburn, and she has on a headset and looks a little bit like Minnie Mouse, but adorable.
But the sound, it's all about the sound for you, Leslie. This magical, beautiful, perfect sound, right?
Except for my computer just made a funny thing. Okay, hopefully. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, it's all about the sound.
She's lying.
She looks very, very cute, but she does have something. She's wearing a funny hat, talking into a microphone. I wanted to get Marianne on here more often because I feel like she makes me laugh, and I enjoy making fun of her almost as much as she enjoys making fun of me, but also she actually knows a ton about gardening. So we'll explore that stuff too. And today, dear listener, we're going to take advantage of her, you know, much bigger garden at this stage. Even when I had a big garden, hers was bigger, and what she's doing and what we all could be doing and how much fun we're having. And so it is April 5th. Yesterday, my mother-in-law turned 99. Can you believe that?
Wow. That's great. Wow.
And she isn't gardening anymore, but I hired a gardener for her, found a gardener for her. And, but she, oh man, she loves gardens. She's so cute. She married a bunch of times. Her name is Betty Spalding, Carter, Harris, Love, Taylor.
Wow. Well, happy birthday, Betty. When I'm 99 years old, if I get to be 99 years old and some little flibbity gibbet, I don't consider myself a flibbertigibbet, but by 99 standards, I am. And says, "Oh, wow, you made it that far. I will slap them." Because it's like, what do you mean if I have any upper body?
I'm going to knock you off your walker to deliver the blow, but it's worth it, baby.
Such a condescending thing to say. Wow, that's amazing.
I know.
Is that terrible?
Yeah, I didn't. For many decades, I did not consider my mother-in-law to be sweet or, you know, anybody to just sort of, oh, and now she sort of is there and it's kind of cool. But yeah, it's not the way it used to be. She was such a capable and forthright. And I remember taking a walk with her up Fifth Avenue and she was probably younger than I am now. And she was tiny, even in her, you know, big size. And now she's really tiny. I couldn't keep up with the woman. I was playing, you know, very competitive tennis at the time. All right. Is this gardening? No. Let's get back to where we're supposed to go.
Please. How's because if we keep like this, we'll talk about your grandchildren and we just need to not.
Oh, God. That's not. Oh, no. Okay.
Tell How's me about my your garden. Garden, you asked? My garden. I am head over heels right now. My garden. I feel like I did when we came back from Dixter last night.
Oh.
That's how I'm feeling right now with it because it's the emergence, right? It's the excitement of the emergence. Everything is emerging. Everything is budding. Not everything. I mean, there's still things that are very asleep, but it's just every day is just a little bit better. Plus, we're having this, I don't know about you 3 hours south of me, but we're having this very nice, long, extended early spring. Like we haven't had heat. We've just had some nice warm-ups and then it cools down, a nice warm-up. So the red buds can sort of slowly swell instead of be blitzed. And it's very cool. The magnolias, now, I was actually going to talk to you about your magnolias and find out what's going on down your way. But so many of them got fooled up here, at least at my place, into blooming or half blooming and then got really blitzed by a very sharp downturn, but that was easily 2 weeks ago. And now I feel like, oh, there were a whole bunch in waiting in the wings that decided not to. Some of the same cultivars that just, okay, maybe we'll just hang back a little bit. And I was wondering if all of yours are over. Like I saw a Magnolia stellata today, which should have been, yeah, it should have been gone. And I'm like 99% sure it was a stellata, but it wasn't mine, so I don't know. So I was wondering about you. What are you seeing down there?
I am sadly ignorant about magnolias. I really have nothing to say. I haven't noticed. I haven't noticed many in the neighborhood. I certainly don't have one myself because, you know, I have five trees and none of them is taller. One is taller than me. So I got nothing, which is, this is a perfect example of why we need you on this podcast.
Well, hey, I'm no magnolia expert at all. I'm still way in the infant stages of magnolias. I've got a few. And
what do you have? Do you have like the ladies, the Elizabeth and Jane and all that?
I have a couple Janes. I have a butterflies, which is a yellow and is always nice. Later. And that's something that I try and tell people getting into magnolias, even with my limited experience, is get a yellow, get one of the after Elizabeth or butterflies, because if we do get that early late frost, so to speak, that, you know, that blitzing freeze, you've got more chance that is blooming a little bit later and that it hasn't come out yet. And so you're still going to have a show. Whereas if you have something very early, you're done, like the stellata, it becomes the dirty handkerchiefs, dirty Kleenexes
not a good look.
What else do I grow? I have a rosemary, which is a very beautiful, huge, and honestly, the buds are 5 inches long and it has that perfect, you can see me, can't you? Yeah. It has that perfect.
But the listeners can't. So she's doing a sort of a ballet move with her arms.
Yes, okay. I am. That very perfect upright, the type of silhouette that the Philadelphia Flower Show wants to uproot and put into one of their designs, you know, because it's just that beautiful. It's so gorgeous.
She's looking like Pavlova, listeners. She's looking great there with her arms. She could do it.
Yeah, except for that one, she got half blitzed and this last time. And I was I was talking and saying, hey, don't do this. We know where this is going. I know what it's going to happen if you do this. And it did it. So I grow a Alexandrina, which is a large pink and red, which is also remontant, which is fun. As the little girls are remodeling too.
Okay, so excuse me.
So reblooming. They are reblooming.
Ah, yeah. I just thought some of the listeners might know that. I knew exactly what that was.
I was going to say, don't you pull this with me, because I've heard you use that word before, probably to try and trip me up. And that's a real bonus, actually, because June comes around. Maybe you had a blitz with your magnolias, you had a really late frost, and you're disappointed, and you're about to pull them out. And then June comes around, and you've got these beautiful leaves, and then, oh my gosh, in the middle of the leaves, these big pink blossoms. So you get, it's like an endless summer hydrangea, in a way.
Nice.
You know, you're going to get that second bloom, probably. I mean, it's not like the first bloom. It's not in your face, but it's beautiful.
It's a smattering, of...
I love that word. Vocabulary A+.
Thank you. It's a smattering of blooms. I would say, now are all of these that we're talking about, maybe not the salata, what's the adjective that comes after the botanical word?
The species.
The species. Thank you. And is that
Solangiana.
And basically are all the ones we're talking about like that? So they are not evergreens like the grandiflora, which is, the one with the leathery leaves.
No, not all of the other. There's a ton of magnolias, and that's where my expertise is gone.
Okay.
I do grow a macrophylla, which is absolutely beautiful. And it is my fourth one, because I was given four, believe it or not, little seedlings by a friend. I planted two. Michael ran over them with the lawnmower.
Oh.
He lived through that.
Michael did?
Okay. Michael, my husband.
The tree did not.
No, the trees did not. Michael lived. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have a bobcat, and it has a digging function, and he still lives through that. Then I had given one to a friend, and she planted it, and a friend who didn't know anything about any plants at all. And she was like, oh, okay, this is great. Planted it, and then left her, moved her out of her house. So I go by and visit it sometimes. And then the fourth one I had to pay serious money for. I think I was given three, and I had to pay serious money for the fourth one.
How big was it when you got it? Do you remember?
Oh, a foot, maybe.
Oh, and you had to pay. Okay. So I bought one inches. Also. Mm-hmm. And you had, that's weird. I paid 30 or 40 bucks for one that at the time I bought it from, Monticello. They sell a smattering of plants there. And I bought it, and it had five leaves on it. And you all, I know that sounds pathetic, but it is a Magnolia macrophylla, and they were big ass leaves. And then I know that you and I talked about it in my yard at Minor Road, and I was torturing it into becoming a 7 foot tall totem pole, because I didn't want it to provide too much shade. And also I didn't want to get out the ladder to prune it. And so now that I've moved away, it will finally be happy and come into its own. And maybe I'll go back and visit it.
I will go back really quickly to say $40 for a tree at that point in my life absolutely is serious money. I didn't want
okay.
I'm getting little tiny saplings from the Flower and Garden Show for free from the Arbor Association and National Arbor Foundation. And but now it's doing pretty well. It's probably about 5 or 6 feet now. And it's
smart enough to tell the difference between an umbrella and a macrophylla? And I don't know the botanical name for the umbrella, but I believe there is a difference. I am not smart enough to know.
Oh, goodness. I always want to put cucumber. Is that the cucumber magnolia, or the something to do with a cucumber?
No, it's definitely umbrella. I know that because, listeners, here I have her on to be the brains, and we've both gone into the deep water that we're treading.
Leslie, I'm drowning.
So here comes the life jacket that, I'll throw you the life jacket of listeners. I'll look this up.
Hold on. I'll just look it up here in my book. I mean, I do actually use books.
I was going to do this after, instead of
Well,
Okay.
you know, we could play the game where you try and get on Google and I just go back to my A to Z of Encyclopedia of Garden Plants
But
and we
what, so what are you going to look
see
up, the
who does
difference
it. But
between?
I was just curious of Magnolia. See, I'm already there. That was quick. There's
Okay.
Stellata, there's Stellangiana. And I was just going to see while you're talking, because I can usually listen to you and hardly pay attention
Because I'm so,
and still talk back to
because what I have to say is so insipid.
That's right.
Triptala, commonly called umbrella magnolia or simply umbrella tree,
Oh.
deciduous native to the United States, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, no, the answer is no. I can't tell the difference. And what I was thinking of was acuminata, and that sounds just like cucumber.
All right, let's back slowly away from magnolias and go into something. What else is
No,
going on in your book?
wait. I
Oh,
do want to tell
no.
you one other thing. No, truly, truly. I do have two southern magnolias that Tom Krenitsky down in North Carolina outside Chapel Hill gave me at 18 inches that he bred for hardiness, you know, stronger hardiness in our
Are we talking
area.
grandiflora
Yes,
evergreen? Yes.
grandiflora.
Okay.
And I at the time was sort of like, I don't think they're going to do well here, Tom. And he said, no, I give them a try, give them a try. And I have protected them 18 inch. I mean, they were tiny and they are magnificent. They're not, my magnificent is, means it's, they are now 9, 10 feet trees and they're
Wow.
absolutely spectacular and I love them. So if you're not growing a southern magnolia and you have some land, you have some space to do it, I would 100% because I look down from the house and I see it across the field, you know, like it's this big, beautiful, shiny beacon in a winter garden, right? Or
Right.
a summer garden or what have you. And so
And when it
that's
blooms, those
yeah.
huge white flowers are beacons of a different type. They're like, somebody's got their high beams coming on at you. But I will say, I love a magnolia. I love the fact that in my HOA, I live across the street from three of them. But if you like a tidy garden, when I moved down to Virginia from Connecticut, the first thing I wanted to get was a magnolia. Back in Virginia, here I go. I grew up with one in Alexandria. And then I started taking care of a client's property that had them. It was like, dealing with a bunch of Amazon boxes that fell on the garden all summer long. All those leaves that fall off. It's not tidy, but it's beautiful and it's so fun to cut from. And if you have a place where either you don't need to be tidy or you don't care about tidy, those leaves, they come down in summer. So just be aware. But they are wonderful trees.
Amen.
Amen.
You may move on now.
Okay, thanks. Enough on magnolias. In the last episode, I talked a lot about bulbs and the ins and outs of whether you leave the foliage or dividing them and that sort of thing. But let's just touch on what you like to do. First of all, first question, do you treat tulips like an annual, or do you go for that, small percentage of what's going to come back?
Boy, I sure wish I could treat tulips, period, but I have voles and I have deer. And so
Oh.
when I use them as annuals for the most part. Now we're just talking about the hybrid, you know, the big, blousy, beautiful tulips that everybody
Yes.
thinks of as tulips, not the species. And those I use in containers on the deck, and I do love them. I try in my garden. The deer-free garden with the fence, but I forgot that I had voles, and they went through because I adore ballerina, and I put about 50 of them in last year. And those little brats is such a small word. They're little bastards. They eat the tulip and then they leave the tunic on top of the soil. It's like a little FU to me. It's
Yeah,
what it is.
yeah.
It's awful. So anyway, that's what I do with those. But I do have, from an initial planting of about 100, I do have probably 20 or so different species tulips that sort of randomly come up here and there. And many of them probably came up because they seeded themselves and they sort of snuck away from the radar of the voles. But yeah, tulips and I love them so much.
Oh, but you can't. What's ballerina? I don't know that one. What color?
Ballerina is orange, and it's a lily-flowered orange, meaning it has the sort of the little, that little beautiful,
In
almost
and out, like the
feminine
little
in and out,
hourglass
just
thing.
like a little woman on a stick, and then the little, and then the little points, and it's just, and it's orange, but there's a little bit of peachy red to it. Absolutely exquisite.
Oh, sounds good.
I mean, we wouldn't even need to talk about bulbs right now if you had just not been so lazy and come to the bulb symposium at Dixter in November last year. You would have had all your questions answered right first.
I would have, but now you are the knowledgeable one, having gotten all that knowledge from that place. So how did that change? And listeners who might be new, so Great Dixter is one of the most famous gardens in England, and Marianne and I were lucky enough to attend a symposia 2 years ago now. It's
That's
2022.
right, and bond strongly.
Yeah, because we hadn't known each other except on Zoom and an occasional email, and all of a sudden there she was at Heathrow Airport. Hey, so she could give me a hard time in person. It was great. And so she signed up for another one. Great Dixter holds these things, and you get on the mailing list, and we hopped off a wait list. We were so lucky. We only knew we were doing this a month before, and then she signed up for another one, and they're very, ours was on succession planting. We learned so much. Yours was on bulbs, which was interesting because I think of that as almost part of succession planting. It's like, where do you stuff these guys in if you have a big garden already? And fitting them in and managing how they're going to look and that sort of thing. I think there's a pruning one, and there are other different ones. I mean, they last for about a week. You get the attention of Fergus Garrett, and I mean, more than you think you should. You're like, wait, doesn't he have a full-time job that like he should be attending to? He's amazing how much,
Agreed, agreed.
and the crew there is so wonderful. All the other gardeners there. Was that part of it? Like, how do you cram these guys in the garden?
Yeah, it is. It's you remember how he laid out all of these different permanent plantings and pockets and what have you, and then how could we throw the bulbs in there? And one of the interesting things for me was that many of their bulbs are not permanent planting bulbs. They pull a lot of their bulbs up and let them dry out in the oast house in the back, and they just dry on these huge racks, and then they pick through them and decide which ones they're going to keep that are big enough and then replant. Now, that's not true for all of their bulbs, but some of the tulips, some of the daffodils, depending, and all the other little ones. And that was a little bit, that was surprising to me, I guess. I think that the biggest lesson that I learned was ways of naturally planting these bulbs based on what would the bulb itself do. If it was in a natural situation, how would the seed be dispersed? How would the bulb disperse itself or offset or what have you? And then plant like that rather than just sort of the random throw them in the air. I mean, there is a little bit of that. I know at the very end of the evening, when it was pouring down rain, we were at Silk Root Garden, and still had a long journey home. At that point, we were sort of throwing the crocus. Okay, where can we crocus just have to get
Just
into
put
the
them
ground, get them and put them in. But ideally, sort of figuring out, particularly in a rock garden situation, if you've got a lot of, say, Tulip turkestanica, for instance, and it's up at the top of this rock formation, how is it going to, how is like water going to take that seed down? And where would the seed then pool and then maybe go down a little bit, trickle down a little bit more and go there? And that was fascinating to me to really think like the bulb. How is the
Wow.
bulb going to place itself? And I think that makes a very not just naturalistic, that word's used a lot, but just I was going to say, let me use another word that's never used, authentic way
We need a thesaurus.
of planting bulbs. And also using bulbs or allowing, and I'm doing that this year successfully for the, in my mind, the first time, allowing the emerging foliage of annuals and perennials to support and actually be part of that bulb display. So I had some cassata daffodils, some chinodoxa, some iphion. I don't know if it's Ifion or Ifion.
How to spell? How to spell?
I-P-H-I-E-O-N.
Ifion. Yeah, I wouldn't know how to say that, but now we know sort of where
it's
we are.
It's a new, beautiful, beautiful bulb. A blue, very star-like flower, grass-like leaves, very low. And some, there were some tete-a-tetes in there, I think, and a few other things. But these are all coming up, and the larkspur foliage is coming up, and the columbine is coming up, and the
so cute that columbine. It sort of like furls up, and then it goes, oh, and then it unfurls. I love the columbine foliage.
All of these things, I didn't do anything except for throw seed, and in a few places I went, okay, you're a little crowded there, I'll thin you, and over here I'll move you over here because it's too thin over here. And I didn't do that much for this kind of, oh, this is a very cool network and feels like a matrix. Now the cassatas are dying back, and that's a great daffodil, by the way.
Cassata.
You grow that cassata, gorgeous.
Can you describe?
As it starts out yellow, with a yellow, give me the name of the inside of the daffodil.
Not cornet. The trumpet thing. Isn't it?
Is it cornet?
Corona. Is it the
corona? Corona.
Oh, I can't. Look at me. How crazy.
Is it a cornetto?
Even a blind pig can find it. Is it a Commodore? Is it Lionel Richie? I don't know. Oh, I just love the way the human brain works. I'm like, wow.
If you're not using something over and over, so the corona there, and it's split, and it splits back, and it turns turns pure white, and then the entire daffodil turns pure white. So you have this yellow phase in it, then a white phase, and then it goes, and then that white phase is actually substantial, and then it goes over, and it's a beautiful daffodil. Mid season,
tall, short.
It's probably 12 to 18 inches. Let's see. Let me look at that. 18, maybe.
Okay, so tall-ish. And one other question, is it just a single bloom, or is it one of those, got two or three
no,
going
it's
on
a,
here?
No, it's a single bloom as far as I can think. Yeah, it's a single, okay. It's a single-headed. Cassata. It's single-headed, and I'm pretty sure it's one stem per bulb.
Okay.
But it's a beautiful bulb.
Good.
Yeah, cassata.
Thank you.
But in any case, these perennials, these annual foliage, is, you know, it's not doing its thing yet, but its thing is the foliage underneath the daffodils. And that is totally Dixter to me. That's going way back through Christopher Lloyd's works, and, you know, the way that he planted a lot of bulbs and using these things for the whole season, not just, okay, now we have the pretty flowers of the larkspur. And, you know, it's oh, no, it's an orchestra. It's like a symphony of these two things. It's fabulous. Yeah.
And they're playing off each other. But, you know, even if you have a baby new garden like mine, here's a happy surprise that happened. I wasn't going to order bulbs at all. Felt sorry for myself. I had to move, and I'm just going to not even have bulbs. Maybe something will come up. And then I was a victim to late season sales. And I ordered a couple of hundred of a purple tulip whose name escapes me. But, it actually has that hourglass thing that you were talking about with your ballerina, but it's purple, and a couple of hundred thalia, but you say talia, daffodils. And so I planted them in between the hydrangea that I put up on the retaining wall. And then apparently I wasn't finished, because about a couple of weeks ago, I thought, oh, look at that. Now this gardener, this guy who lived here before me, he did plant some daffodils, and not just like one or two, like I'm seeing up in the other garden along the fence. Like, these are some good groups coming along, and up they come, and they are enchanting, and they are not supported. They're not part of a symphony orchestra yet, because I'm just not there, but it's five real good clumps and centered nicely. And, you know, right in front of this Japanese maple, and they're making me so happy. I'm like, wow, that guy did that thing. And I'm loving that. But isn't that weird that that's thalia? And that's what I had. All of a sudden I walk over and I'm like, oh, I did that. Because, and I know this because where they are planted used to be lawn, but I accidentally, on purpose, when I edged the bed last fall, said, this is too skinny, I'm taking back some lawn. And they're all in that section.
Okay. That was totally you. Now, are those purple tulips in with the talias?
Yeah, they are. And they look
great.
Oh,
that must be beautiful.
Yeah,
I love that daffodil. Honestly, I've got a lot of different daffodils here. A lot. But that has got to be top of my list. That
So give a
is.
description just in case people don't know it. It's a white one, it's a double, triple. What
It
else?
is. It's got several heads per stem, and it is late, which is really nice, because once all of that first flush of the exciting yellow and spring is here, and then, oh, and here come the Tayas,
Yeah.
so that they sort of clean it up. Because, remember Scott Berline did a great post on Garden Rant. I hate to even say that and massage his head, but it was a good post about the what did he call it? The B grade movie death scene
Yes,
that
with
daffodils go
daffodil
through.
foliage. That was spot on.
And it was absolutely spot on, and that's what happens. And so when that's starting to happen with some of my other earlier daffodils, like Rapture or the Tete-a-Tetes are going over, whatever, here come Talia, and they brighten that whole scene, and it's back up to this clear white that's starting to pick up viburnums that are blooming, or the Ponceiris is blooming, or maybe there's some later yellows, or Tahiti is that's another beautiful daffodil.
That's got orange and yellow in it, right? That's pretty
It's a big
roughly.
double, very
Yeah.
roughly, very unlike me to like that one, but I do like it. And they are fabulous. Plus, they have a scent.
Yes.
Talia has a beautiful scent. And also, I'm going to dig up a couple clumps this year and check this, but I know they are a lot thicker than what I originally put in at this place 5, 6 years ago. And I have planted many more since, but not right in the same spot. And these clumps have gotten big fast. So I'm curious to dig up a clump this year and have a look and see how they've divided themselves.
And do you do that just because you're greedy and you want more and these are free plants, or are you thinking, oh, I don't want them to get a little too, crowded and then they might come up blind next year or something, because they kind of get too close sometimes, right?
Definitely option A. I am very cheap. Actually,
Definitely.
I was telling a friend, I say that now, I'm gonna own that. I was telling a friend, we were on a walk and I was talking about some plant, and I said, "Well, I'm a little bit frugal." And she goes, "Marianne, you're cheap." Like, she goes, "It's okay. You always have been. It's fine. I actually admire it." And I'm like, "That didn't sound like you admired it."
Is pretty a word.
That's a very harsh word.
Furious. I know. Cheap, cheap. All right. We have about 20 minutes left, which I think is enough time to talk about quickly. My first question is, what are some things that you have not done in the garden that you're beginning to like not feel so good that you haven't done them and they're on your hot list? Like, really, it's going to be too late soon. I got to get this done. You got some chores?
I've got two that are top of my mind. I have a lot of hydrangea here, and for the most part, I have pruned them all except my limelights. I haven't pruned because it's a big job. I've got a couple, and every time I look at them, I think I'll do that tomorrow. Now what's going to happen is I'm going to be taking off a lot of the growth where they're starting to sprout, and then it's going to take them a little bit longer to start to put energy into those nodes below where I'm
What's
cutting.
your goal? What's your goal for the pruning? Because listeners, in nature, there ain't nobody out there with those sharp objects. So they can. It's not like it's a horticultural demand of hydrangeas that they be pruned. But we like control. So what's your goal when you go to prune these hydrangeas?
My goal is to have a nice size, well-balanced shrub that is more tree-like for the limelights. So something that's about 12 feet tall, 10 to 12 feet, I would say. And that means pruning for me at about chest height, or a little bit higher. And it's going to put on an enormous amount. Maybe not, maybe at head height, and then they'll go from there. I've never been a good one for how tall is that. So I'd say I'm probably looking for something at the end of the season that's about 10 feet tall.
How handy that that means tall enough so that the deer can't eat those blooms, right?
Well, actually, that is 100% why I started doing that, was to get them above browse line,
Yeah.
because I have two, and one of them is not as healthy as it could be, the old growth, and it really doesn't look good. It looks pretty shabby, but all of the new growth is sending up from the bottom, which is tremendous, and which I really need to encourage, is being nibbled back by deer. And so in order to renovate the shrub, I've got to put a wire around it and allow those to get bigger. And I just, it's in a more mature part of my garden, and I don't have a lot of really mature parts of my garden. I just hate to see that. So
yeah.
I've just been ignoring it. And I think that's probably why I haven't pruned the limelight yet, because I've got to make some decisions that I probably don't want to make.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's big on the list that always gets me every year, because they move so fast, are the Solomon seal, the polygonata. And I have a lot of those, a lot. And it's so funny. I look at how much they are in catalogs. You know, when you don't have them, they're expensive.
Yeah.
And then when you have them, they just make so many babies so quickly. And I have other places in my garden I want them to go. But if you don't get to them, and I'm sure you know this, by the time they are, say, 3-4 inches, and you even before that, you want to get them, then wherever you end up transplanting them to, they're sort of, their roots aren't properly down, and they just sort of want to flop for the rest of the season. And they're not going to grow any more stems and leaves. They're just going to put roots down, and that one stem will sit there, you know, just like,
look, it's like, and you know, they have this beautiful pattern that they grow in, you know, it's cascading down a hillside or leaning toward the sun. And then if you let that chore go too long, you've got a dog's breakfast, because you can't possibly, unless you've got some anal tendencies that are so strong, you can't possibly get them back to that pattern of, yes, we're all heading in this direction to look like we should. It's just gonna, you got to get those suckers really early.
Yeah. I did take a shovel out there a couple weeks ago, and I pulled some up from some areas under other shrubs that were starting to move up underneath the chamaecyparis. And so they were obviously had to be pulled out. And then I sort of threw them in where I wanted them somewhere else. But I could do so much more with that plant if I just got my proverbial shite together. Oh, shoot. I'm not supposed to say that. Sorry.
And yet you did.
And
yet
I
you
did. Sorry.
How do you think? I think the best way I've seen that plant grown, and I was trying to do that back at Minor Road, maybe I could try a little bit here. I don't think it made the travel team though, so I have to get some from you.
It's very expensive. You're gonna pay.
How about a trade for you stealing my hellebore? Is looking at a hill, you're standing at the bottom of a hill, and they're all leaning towards you, looking pretty lovely, right?
Oh yeah, or over a wall, a damn sight better than your Annabelle hydrangea, I would say.
Don't be talking about my Annabelles. All right, so those are two things that are high on your list. Have you started to think about some, you know, hardening some things off, like bringing some things out of your garage and saying, okay, let's get down to 40 degrees at night in a barn, you know, beginning to get move things a little bit, or that's all in the future?
Oh yeah, everything that's in the garage, with the exception of one very large Brugmansia, is out in the greenhouse, which is a big cold frame. I would say that it's about 4 to 5 degrees above ambient temperature. So, you know, if we're at 32 or 33, and we've had a couple of those, I'm safe at 39. It's not ideal, because really you want to bring those out and get that heat going, and then they're just grow. But it is what it is. And we live in an unideal world, and we don't all have the perfect situation. And so they'll be fine. They are just fine. I did have a night two weeks ago,
where you
we dropped
turned
down
off the heat. Oh,
no.
Up.
I don't heat
oh,
it.
But
I
something
have a
bad
fan.
Happened. I saw on Instagram, something bad happened. It looked quite frosty, actually.
I had a fan in there. I have a fan in there that I use when it's hot. And so it's off, and electronically switched off. And we were using the one plug that's in there to do something else in the garden. And I plugged the fan in, just not thinking.
Oh.
Plugged in, back to factory settings. It exhausts the extra humidity that was in the house and all that nice warm air. And so when I woke up in the morning, it should have been absolutely fine. And I looked down from my bedroom and I could see the greenhouse and I could see that the walls were all frosty. Oh, like they were white. Like, oh my gosh, I just moved everything out there. But once I got over the, oh my gosh, what's just happened? I was like, oh, you know what? Let's see what did okay with that. I know exactly what temperature it got down to. I have an idea of how long it got down to that temperature. And so it became a learning opportunity. So I didn't lose anything.
Oh, that's great.
I did lose some leaves. I would have lost seedlings, I'm sure, from tender things. Like if my tomatoes had been up, I'm sure the tomatoes would have been like, yeah, and we're out of here.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't have survived because, you know, the root systems wouldn't be good enough. But the bananas, you just peeled back a couple more layers of leaves and they were fine. Mm-hmm. And same with some of the aroids. And yeah, so it was interesting. I'm not saying I'm happy for the experience, but every single thing we do is a learning experience.
Yeah.
So and here's a real quick, because I want to ask you a question, but here's a real quick thing on that. Last time I was at the symposium, the one that you were too lazy to attend.
It's cold in England in November.
Right. I remember we were walking through the greenhouse area and they have all of their seedlings laid out for the next year. And, you know, those seedlings are money. They're either display, you know, which they've got a place to go next year, or they've got to be sold and support the garden. And mice get in, right? And Fergus was showing us, and this is, you already explained who Fergus is and all that, but Fergus was showing us the cold frame situation, and he pulls it back, and a mouse had gotten into, I don't know, 20 little seedlings. And I'll never forget this because I would have let out an expletive. I mean, I'm not a particularly foul-mouthed person, although I have already dropped one on your show.
The pronunciation made it so that it wasn't so bad.
That's right. So he sort of got down on his haunches and he just looked at it and you could see him just sort of absorbing, thinking about it. Okay. I mean, I don't know what was going through his brain exactly, but from the outside, it looked like he was going, okay, what am I going to do here? How am I going to solve this problem? I mean, for all I know, he just said every bad word known to man in his brain, and he's just extremely calm on the outside. But it just was such a beautiful reaction of, that just happened. Okay. All right. Shift gears, pivot, move on. And I keep going back to that little moment when things like this happen. Okay. That happened. Let me deal with it. And I was telling my friend Andrea Sprott down at the Elizabeth Lawrence Garden about this moment. And I said, it's just like, you just got to say, forget, whatever. Just forget. So now it's our best. Now it's our thing. It's so we say, oh, forget. Just forget.
Fergus, forget.
Yeah. Just forget. It's fine. It'll be good. And move on, pivot and move on. And as gardeners, we really need to do that. So, yeah. So my question for you is, how did Jeff take to ripping out that holly, and did he forget?
On my back wall above the bowling alley, Marianne had a look and she had some suggestions. And one of them I totally agreed with was to get rid of a large holly that was sort of making it so, wait, is that the end of the garden? It was just kind of in the way. Then it was blocking what could potentially be in future years, because it's not so great now, good things. So down it came. And I did it all in one day. And it wasn't difficult until the end, where I have my 6-inch silky saw and it's about a 6-inch trunk. I actually didn't get to the bottom of it. I got it to a reasonable height of about a foot tall. And then I placed a little ceramic hedgehog on the top as if it were totally intentional. Not that I couldn't saw the rest of the trunk of the thing down.
I just threw up a little in my mouth. I have to hold on just a minute, because that's mixing with the chocolate now.
I like my tchotchkes in the garden. And we can't have real hedgehogs.
So, oh my goodness.
It's what do they say? It's what is that word that people use when they
Whimsy. Don't say whimsy. Don't.
That's
stop.
The word we use when we disagree with everybody else's taste. It's just whimsical taste. Oh, I get it.
Man.
It's bad. So he was fine with that. I am very pleased with that. I planted near it one of the cedars. I didn't get Taylor's, but I got the Skyrocket cedar and Blackhawks. And I got three of each of these
plants. You mean a juniper, right?
Yeah. Did I say, who knows what I said, but it's a Skyrocket juniper. So a blue gray thing that will hopefully be tall and skinny, but we'll see. And it's that beautiful blue green color. And next to that, so this is near where the holly was. And next to that, I put in a Blackhawks grass and I put in two others sort of in, you know, kind of random making triangles with both of those plants. You know what I mean?
Oh, I do. The hedgehog, no way. Get rid of it at once. The Blackhawks, absolutely fantastic choice for up there.
Good,
that is
good.
A beautiful grass. And it's going to be even better because it's up on the hill. So you're going to be looking up at the just the variation in that foliage. It's so gorgeous. That is a great grass.
And the other things I threw out there were some Vernonia iron butterfly, or maybe something at the end of summer. I can't remember the name of it, but a Vernonia to sort of flop down. And this was an experiment. I talked about these poor listeners. I'm going backwards, but I talked about this last week. I literally took, you know, can you picture a million hellebore seedlings that are no more than an inch tall?
Oh yeah, I've got them.
I grabbed a handful of those and I just took my saw knife and went stab, plunk all over that hillside. So in future years, instead of beautiful Virginia red clay on that hillside, because so many of the plants there are so deciduous and so not emerging now, they are calycarpa and they are late to break dormancy. So instead of looking at sticks, I'm hopeful to be looking at hellebores. We'll see if it works.
Interesting. Is it just pure clay up there?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's that beautiful orange color. I'd say it rivals the hedgehog in terms of aesthetic qualities. Bad. It's pretty bad. I don't like orange in the garden. I don't like clay. All right. So now let's get back to what gardeners might want to think about for the next few weeks. Here we are recording on April 5th. This will probably drop midway through April. We're in Virginia, but you know, it's kind of high spring. Priorities for me.
It's not
would include,
high spring. What are you talking about?
But well, no, you're right. It's early spring now. It certainly feels like a day. Good Lord. I was wearing a puffy jacket. But by the time this drops, it'll feel like mid-spring in Virginia. In the north, it'll feel like it'll just be beginning. I think getting out there and looking every day is your top priority because of the emergence and the fun, right? Any other things that you sort of want to get done?
Look every day. And if you still have the memory to do it, I would really sit down. I'm going to tell you to do something boring right now, but do it, I don't know, while you're watching TV. Get your journal out, get something that you can write down that you will look at, not on your phone because you're never going to listen to it again, and write down the order of how things are taking over in your garden, which one's blooming, which one's going over, particularly with your bulbs. What was the succession with them?
Right.
So that you know where you can insert things for next year, right? The idea is to extend that season, and you can't extend that season if you could only have random memories of what came first and what came second and what came third and what came together. So if you can be charting this for your garden, and maybe like in a separate column, you can be noticing somebody else's garden. Oh, they've got Diasporum, which is coming up and beautifully blooming. And wouldn't that look good with my Ridgersia that's on its way up, the emerging, you know, and so that you can start to put things together, because we just forget. We forget which is first. Does the Cassata come up after the Talia or with it? Or, and you can go back and look at your phone and 100%, you know, look at your photos, but you can bet that the little place, the question that you have, you didn't take a photo of that particular place.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really great idea to go around and just keep looking and just, you know, writing down, making a check mark. If you want to be really anal, you could do a chart of the plants that you have and you can just check off when they bloom.
Oh yeah.
And of course it's going to be different every year. Every year is different. So it's
But not the schedule, not the general schedule of this one coming before that one.
I used to think that.
Oh.
I used to think that. And I just assumed that that's true. It's got to be true that, you know, the season's going to affect everything the same way. Early, late, but I don't know. It doesn't, because for instance, and I was just looking at it yesterday, I have a picture of my Ruderzia podophyllum, which is a, well, it's a, whatever that is, common name, I can't remember. And
I don't think I know what the common name for Ruderzia. Anyway, it's a very big leaf perennial. It's very, it's kind of tropical looking. So it's right up Marianne's alley, and it kind of likes a bit of wet in the, right? Doesn't it kind of grow?
Yeah, it would prefer to be moister. Yeah. Which it's not getting in my garden, but it's still healthy. We're good. But there it was there it was really emerging strongly with the gold heart dicentra behind it and looking really, really good. And it's not out yet. The gold heart's been up for 2 weeks.
Oh.
The Ruderzia is only just starting to emerge, and it's a huge clump. I mean, very mature clump. So it's not as if, oh, well, it's new, what have you.
Yeah.
That is different this year. And there's another place where I'm like, oh, if that's out, that should be out. That's not out. So my feeling is that generally, yeah, things do come out at the same time together, meaning, you know, they have
the same succession of bloom or emergence. Yeah.
But some things may be more triggered by warmer soil, some things warmer air, some things by moisture levels, the day length, you know, the day length I would think would change, just, you know, that's going to be the one constant that they're all sharing, right? But moisture levels might be different in one area than another.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, you are going to have these little tweaks. And you're also, for newer plants and for newly planted bulbs, like last year, fall planted bulbs, they're going to be later. They're going to emerge later.
Yeah, than the established bulbs.
Which is why you can't listen to somebody who's just planted their first, you know, 600 Talias and say, wow, they come out in June.
They
don't.
It's actually a really good trick if you want to hold off, if you're worried about these 90 degree days in April and you want to hold off a display, for example, you know, something that's probably happening possibly as this episode is dropping, which is Historic Garden Week. People can be very disappointed by the tulips going past for the third week of April in Virginia. Well, not if you just planted them in December, they're probably going to be just fine. It really helps.
But charting that somehow so that you have an idea for next year and can, you know, figure this out. I think for 80% of it is going to be about the same. In terms of how they, whatever you just said, I'm losing my vocabulary here, but what they do at around the same time together. But I think there's like a 20%
variance
in that
on different conditions that we don't quite understand.
Yeah.
There's so much I don't understand. Let's face it.
You just don't want to understand it. I keep trying to make you. If you just come to the Bulb Symposium.
I have other talents besides great knowledge, like my sparkling personality.
You're very easygoing, because honestly,
I'm very easygoing.
Most people would have checked me already.
Two sentences about Belize, and then I got to go have a date with my husband.
I'm finally going on vacation. Oh, I'm so happy.
But to like not just like Niagara Falls, baby, this is Belize.
Yes, we're going to go and visit some friends who live on an island off the coast of mainland Belize, and I am going off grid. I don't want to see my phone. I don't want to see.
No, you have to photograph all the tropicals that you love. Just take a camera.
Oh, I'm taking my camera. My 35 mil and me are going to get romantically entangled again.
Don't forget about Michael.
It's our 30th anniversary. I can't believe it. I bet you've done this too. I don't know if you were a big photographer before the advent of the iPhone, but I was.
Not so much.
And not meaning like I was some celebrated photographer. I just mean I like to take photos.
Marianne Wilbur,
photographer.
Professional photographer.
Once the really good technology came along, it just became very easy to pull out my phone. And so you forget skills that you once had when you don't use them all the time. How to pronounce words, for instance. You know, but using your camera is a really big one. And I just want to get back in touch with it. And it may mean that every single picture I take in Belize sucks. But that's good. Because I'm not going to planning on sharing them. I just want to.
Really? You're not going to throw some stuff on the IG?
No, it's not happening. Because
okay. When
do you get away? You don't. You never get away. When you're a person who loves plants, everywhere I look is work. I love my work, but it doesn't mean that I don't need to get away from it. yeah. No, don't even try and call me. I'm not answering the phone.
I'll miss you so much. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I think it's going to be wonderful.
I mean, don't you find that, or maybe you don't? You don't take things as seriously as I do. So maybe.
No. But I'm also not the person who was on for 85 days in a row this winter. I actually went for several weeks without touching it. Instagram, we're talking about. And I give myself more frequent but shorter breaks. And so, you know, I'll go for 2 or 3 days in the middle of the week and I won't know anything. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, I didn't respond to this. But I think this what you're doing is very healthy.
What I'm trying to do is just recapture that feeling of what it used to be like in our lives. I mean, do you remember when we used to try and get away from people showing us their slideshows at the end of dinner? I mean, you think, oh, great.
Oh, God, how old are you?
Well, my dad.
I never. Or what kind of friends did you have? What?
Look,
I never.
My father always brought out the slides. And it was so exciting as children. Yes,
ooh.
It was so exciting as children. But and when he'd had visitors from all over the world all the time. And they were interested. I mean, I think they were. Some of them, I'm sure, rolled their eyes. But it was exciting as a child. But I realized culturally, it was a joke that we to get away from people showing you their slideshows. And now we wake up in the morning and the first thing we do is start looking at everybody's slideshow. And it's
God, I never thought about
and
that.
It's
Isn't that funny?
It's very odd when you think about it. So I just want a little bit of time away from everyone's slideshow, including my own.
Okay.
Is that,
I mean, you could think of it as a form of social terrorism when somebody brings out that carousel. It's just like, oh my God, run away. But you're absolutely right. I never thought about that. So girl, get you to Belize and have a wonderful time. I'm going to go have a date with my husband. You have a lovely anniversary with Michael and we will talk soon.
All right. Looking forward to it. Enjoy.
Okay. Bye, cutie.
Bye.
I hope that little conversation brought you smiles and some information. It was certainly amusing to us. We do amuse ourselves. Hey, that purple tulip that I couldn't remember that I had planted with the Thalia daffodils, I looked it up and it has quite a name. You may know that I'm a big fan of Color Blends bulbs. And in fact, that company used to sponsor this podcast before I got rid of my sponsors and became an even lazier podcaster because I didn't want to be beholden to a schedule. But it's a lovely company, Color Blends bulbs, and they have fabulously big, fat, healthy bulbs. And this particular one that I bought at the end of last season on a whim, thinking, you know, I'm not going to buy any bulbs. But of course, I failed at that. I did buy bulbs. It's got an hourglass figure. It's a medium purple color, and it's called, you ready? Yume no Murasaki. Yume, Y-U-M-E, and then the word no, and then Murasaki, Murasaki. Just think of it as like, you may know more about this tulip after you get it next year. It bloomed for me a long, long time. We had some 80-degree days, and it just kept powering on. I only cut a few of them because I was enjoying looking at them so much, but I did cut a few of them to put into arrangements, and it seemed to last a long, long time indoors also. Yume no Murasaki. Sorry, it's such a mouthful. So what has been going on in my garden this week or lately? The daffodils are finished, but the foliage is still very stiff and green, so it will be there for a little while longer while it collects all that energy from the sun. I have a big population of tiny baby hellebores in this garden, so I actually deadheaded my hellebore flowers for the first time. I don't think I've ever done that. I mean, I love hellebores, and, you know, the more the merrier. But in a tiny garden, enough is enough. You can't let one plant take over. So the foliage will be a lovely filler. Hellebore foliage is great. It's just very well behaved, and it's not too rudely expansive, and you can hide sticks and things under it. It's great stuff. It's just that pretty dark green, and it will be filler for the garden, but no more flowers because no more babies. Thank you very much anyway. I think I have terrorized my rabbits enough to stay away sometimes. Actually, I did have to get up from recording this podcast to go throw rocks at them. But my cosmos seedlings seem to be standing, and they would be absolutely mowing those down if left to their own devices. So I think they're kind of scared of me. What else? You might be amused by this. You know how you're supposed to, you know, live in a new garden for a year before you do anything major? Well, I think I made kind of a mistake in the bowling alley. It's actually a little sunnier than I thought. I moved in on September 5th, and to me, it was like, okay, we got a shade garden here. It turns out that as you get closer to that June equinox, it seems to be a bit of a baking, sunny, skinny, narrow little oven. And so for the next couple of months, I might be making some plants crispy. You know, wouldn't you think that I would know better and wait for it? It's okay. I just have to adjust some plants or shift some to be like either in a slightly less sunny place or maybe under the skirts of some taller things that can take some sun. That's what new gardens are about. A lot of mistakes. This week, after we go through a little cold spell, I'm going to sow some zinnias, cosmos, and larkspur. Larkspur could probably really take the cold. I could have done that a while back, but they were on the same shelf as these other packets. Larkspur and celosia up on my hillside and on my lower little garden just to see what comes up. I mean, I hope they come up. I'm going to direct sow. My little plant room under grow lights that I did in February and March, it did just fine. I enjoyed that, and I think I'll expand that operation next year. But now it's time to be outside. The only other thing I've gotten done lately is to establish a very large pot on my front sunny porch with herbs. That's the closest sunny spot to the kitchen, and I'm hopeful that I'll remember to walk out there and snip some things on those rare occasions when I actually cook a meal. I chose bronze fennel and parsley. I hope to have some caterpillars hanging out there, but I don't know because it is on a balcony. We'll see. The curly kind of parsley. A couple of different oreganos, basil, of course. What else? Oh, rosemary, which I hope gets quite big over the years. That should be fine in that really sunny, protected place. I didn't leave room for cilantro, which was a mistake because I love it. So I'll have to rethink that or maybe get another pot going. It's interesting to water plants that are on the balcony. You can either stand at your kitchen sink and fill up containers and walk back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Or you can do what I do, which is to lower a bright pink ribbon that I had two spools of. I sort of tie it to a chair and toss it off Rapunzel-like from the balcony. Then I go downstairs and I tie the other end to my hose, which I turn on. And then I go back upstairs and I pull up my hose and I water. So it's kind of an efficient system, I think. And I'm quite sure it amuses people who walk by, which is always a bonus. Maybe this is a byproduct of loving to spend money on plants, but I do think I will end up improving on some plants that I inherited that are of, shall we say, dubious pedigree. I'm thinking of the numerous calicarpa on the back hill, but I'll try to be patient and wait and see how I like them. A rose that was planted in the shade, but it is blooming, just like two or three blooms, because it's really in the shade. It's a fascinating rose. A quick Google search reveals that it could be Joseph's coat, because I typed in, climbing rose, yellow turns to pink. Weird, right? Like I said, only a couple of blooms. But it's really kind of cool. It literally, you know, it's a bud. You think, okay, we got a yellow rose. This is nice. And then all of a sudden, you know, oh, wait, that's pink. And it's kind of a reddish pink. It's fascinating. I'm growing some moonflower vine at the base of it. And so if nothing else, I could, you know, it's going to support that and spit out a few interesting blooms. I think that the most dubious plants of all the dubious plants that I inherited is this little row of, like, I don't know, half a dozen barberries near the front door. Now, that is an alien invasive plant. And I'm not going to enjoy pruning them, even if they weren't, because they just, well, they're full of thorns, and they tend to bend and fold when they're supposed to be upright. You see, it's supposed to be this row of very columnar plants. It's probably the cultivar Hellman's pillar. By the way, barberry is a pretty terrible plant. People are developing some sterile barberries, but according to the research I did, Hellman's pillar is not sterile. So even though it provides a really good screen where it is, and it's well established, it's like 6 feet tall, I have a feeling I'm going to want a row of almost anything else, because, I mean, I don't want to contribute to that in the woods. And also, I don't want to prune it because of the thorns. And actually, when I think about it, I don't want to switch it out because of those thorns. So I'm going to have to think about this. What do I want, and who's going to get those things out of the ground for me? Let me tell you about two plants that I didn't know I had, because they were up above the bowling alley, up on the wall, and they were behind these way overgrown camellias. And I thought they were little baby trees, you know, maybe weed trees. But they had these buds on them, so I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I got a magnolia or something. But they weren't blooming, and magnolias are kind of doing their thing now, or did way before. So this is, we're now April 23rd that I'm recording this. I hope to drop this tomorrow, April 24th. Anyway, these are native type azaleas or rhododendrons. They're very tree-like. They were possibly just reaching for the sun, but I think with a little research, I've found that there's something called flame azaleas, which actually do get very tall, fairly fluffy now, but before they like flowered out, the buds were almost like paws, almost like buckeye buds. And now they're spreading out, and one of them has yellow blooms. It's kind of a golden yellow, and they're huge. They're like 5 inches across. And then the other shrub, tree-ish shrub, has burnt orange blooms, and they're probably 3 or 4 inches across. These two colors are not my favorite in the garden, but I'm really enjoying these. And like I said, I think they're called flame azaleas. And if I'm right, they're native to the southeast of the United States. So that's rhododendron calendulaceum, like calendula, I guess. I'm reading on the Missouri Botanical Database that they attract butterflies, although I haven't seen any on them yet. I was hoping they'd be a magnet for hummingbirds with that crazy color, but it didn't say so. Anyway, it's just so fun to see somebody else's taste in the garden. And honestly, these are things I never would have chosen, although I did buy a pinkster, because I like pink. I did buy a pinkster native azalea. It's only a foot tall yet, so we got to wait for that one. I'm really enjoying looking at these guys. One of them is probably 6 feet tall. The other's probably 8 or 9 feet tall. They're definitely keepers, unlike that barberry. Okay, guys, this is enough. And the next episode, whenever I get my act together, which hopefully will be within 2 weeks instead of 2 weeks plus, I'm going to be chatting with Madeline Hooper, who is doing a second season of that show Garden Fit, which is on PBS. It's a fabulous show. It combines visiting really wonderful gardens and fixing what ails the people who garden in them. None of us get through life without some aches and pains, right? So there's a personal trainer who comes along with Madeline and helps the gardener improve the body. Oh, and they're concentrating on artists' gardens for this season. And then, my goodness, after that episode, it's probably going to be quickly time to do a preview with Mary Ann Wilburn about this fabulous garden trip that she is running that I am going on at the end of May. All right, so I'll be back. Music, as always, is by my friend Rusty Gear. And no sponsors, just little me. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon.